Linux device management. This is what I want to talk about today. Basically how user space and kernel relate to each other, and then basically explain a little how I make device management, or and intend to make device management in Linux more namespace aware. So we need Age of Containers, basically. First of all, who am I, probably? I'm a software engineer working at Canonical right now, at the Ubuntu server team. I do a lot of upstream work, basically, so I'm not really working on Ubuntu, so if you have any questions about package management or so on, I'm just going to say I have no idea. I'm a maintainer of Lexi and LexD projects for glibc, and I'm working on the kernel as well. That should be sufficient, I think. Right. So the idea is a little bit, we are going to see what devices are actually in Linux, how the kernel manages devices, then switch over to the user space side, how user space is doing device management, and how the two relate to each other. And once we have covered those two subjects, the idea is to see how devices in the Age of Containers are actually or should be treated or are going to be treated. So devices in Linux, so first of all, what are devices? If you're a lazy bastard like me, you could just say it's a file, because that's the sort of Unix philosophy of everything is a file, but actually it's more correct to say it's basically behaving like a file, which means you mimic the I/O behavior of regular files. So you can open it, you can write to it, and you can read from it. Devices can have optimized I/O methods. So for example, you can have the splice call, which is for pipes, and pipes are devices. That's a good point. So there are different types of devices, obviously. So how many devices do we have in Linux? Like, what are typical devices and device files on Linux?
Character
block, exactly. One I gave away is pipes, and there's a fourth one, related, sockets. They're actually device files as well. Usually they would then show up conceptually when we talk about them, but they're actually devices as well. And they can have optimized I/O methods sometimes. Meaning, for example, for pipes, you have the splice syscall, and what the splice syscall allows you to do is actually to not go through the user space buffers, which means everything that gets written to a pipe gets directly copied through the other end in the kernel. So you avoid the overhead of having a copy to user and then copying it back to through the kernel into the other end of the pipe. Send message, for example, for sockets, because if you want to send a fixed sized message or something. So mimic I/O model of regular files to some extent, in the sense that you can use normally write syscalls and operations to perform operations on them, but they can have optimized methods. So it's kind of a fuzzy metaphor, I think. All devices, right now at least, are usually created with the make not syscall. All interesting devices that we care about today, character devices and block devices. You obviously can create sockets with the socket syscall and pipe with some other syscall. Maybe it's the same underlying syscall, I'm not sure right now. And what you basically do is, this is the prototype. Do we have some sort of pointer actually? No, it doesn't matter. So this is the syscall layout, or at least the glibc wrapper layout, but I think in this case the actual syscall arguments shouldn't be too much different. So you specify a path name, which is obviously the name of the device you want to create. You specify a mode, and the mode specifies what type of device you want to create: character device, block device, pipe, socket, and it's basically a bunch of macros you can use. And then you OR it, bitwise OR it with, for example, the permissions you want to give it, 600, 755, whatever. And if you specify that you want to create a character device or a block device, then this argument becomes meaningful as well, because you can pass in, so a device number in Linux is identified by a major and minor number, and the major number is basically an identifier for the device, so the kernel knows about these major numbers. And if you, for example, want to implement a new driver in the Linux kernel and you want to bring it upstream, you usually, there are other methods, but you usually want to request a major device number. So for example, the major device number for the dev console device is 5. And if you pass in 5 and 0 right here, there is a macro that you can use to create the actual dev number. Then the kernel will know what type of device to create. I think it should be possible to also pass in bullshit stuff in there, but then you create a device but the kernel doesn't know what to do with it, so it's really not that helpful. And if you look in the kernel side of things, basically the call chain is you hit VFS make not, which is the virtual file system layer call that basically does everything that is independent of the specific implementation of the file system itself. And I should say, if you want to correct me, feel free to yell at me anytime. I'm not pretending that I'm going to know everything about this. So, and then the call chain is going down into the file system specific stuff. So in this case, for example, I've taken the X4 make not syscall. There is also a syscall. There is the X4 make not call. There is also a call for ButterFS and for all kinds of file systems that deal with device files. And these are actually links into the source code of the Linux kernel. So if you're interested and you get my slides, you should be able to look at this stuff. And if you have questions, we can look at it right now. A usual Linux system comes with a bunch of standard devices. In this case, devfull, devnull, devrandom, devtty, devurandom, and devzero that have kind of different, they're usually called pseudo devices, but they're mostly just random, regular character devices. And they have different jobs. And most of you know, like for example, devfull, I think, always reports back to you that the device is full, it's used in testing block devices and so on. Devzero lets you read endless amounts of null, devurandom, zeros, and urandom and random, basically random data. And tty is always your controlling terminal if you have one. And every Linux system usually starts out with these devices. And I should probably, yes. So exactly, how is device management done from the kernel's perspective? So first of all, device nodes are simply files, which means you could create devices anywhere in the file system tree, whatever you want. Like you could create it in your home directory. If you use the make not tool that it comes with the util Linux package, you can create it anywhere. But the Linux actually reserves, or I guess most Unix-y file distributions or systems, reserve a specific place for device files, at least for character and block device files. Sockets and pipes you will usually find anywhere on your system, wherever a program feels fit to create them. So. But /dev is not a regular directory, actually. It's a file system, and it's a so-called pseudo file system. Pseudo in the sense that it mimics the behavior of a regular file system, and it's a little bit of a fuzzy concept in the sense that it's not, it depends on the context when we say something, what we require from a pseudo file system to implement to call it actually something like a file system. In this case, for example, devtempfs, you can mount it, you can interact with it, you can create other files and directories and so on there, but it's, for example, it's not backed by an actual storage device, usually, like you would with any, with most file systems. So all of the files just live in memory. So this devtempfs is where the kernel maintains all of the devices. And it's usually mounted pretty early at boot up. It must be in the init RAMFS probably. And for every device that the kernel detects and knows about, it will create a device node in there at boot up. The advantage of this solution is that you can boot up embedded systems without having any kind of significant user space going on. So on an embedded device, you are guaranteed that the kernel, for example, will probably create devnull, devfull, devfull, devzero, and so on, and devconsole and devtty. So devtempfs was the solution to this problem. There was a long, basically, if we look at the history of this, as far as I could reconstruct it, there already was something like a devtempfs a while back. I think it was called devfs. Then devfs got removed and device management was totally punted to user space, meaning device node creation and so on was done by UDEV completely. Then there was some discussion going on about reintroducing DevFS and DevTempFS. People were opposed. Christoph Helwig, one of the big guys in kernel development, was totally opposed to it. And then Greg and Kai Sievers implemented DevTempFS, which is sort of a compromise. But it's actually it's a pretty elegant solution actually. As I said, like if we look at this, oops, that's going to be small, right? And I don't think I have a bigger terminal with me. Is this sort of, can you somehow see this?
No.
Okay, excellent. Then, ST. Yes, we're going to compile something. Is that okay? Or should I make it a little bigger? And should I switch colors?
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. So if we look at def, if we ever get this done right here. Okay. So if we look at def right now. First of all, you see that there's a bunch of devices, like I said, for example, there's dev, view random, dev, view input, whatever, all kinds of devices, and you always see they have a major and minor device number, so there is the major number 1, and major number 5, I guess, in this case, this is dev 0, so this is how the kernel actually identifies devices. Exactly. So DevTempFS, what it allows the kernel to do is basically do dynamic device management in a, I'd say, pretty easy manner. You could, for example, I can demonstrate one thing that's really good. Right now, I have a dev KVM device right here, right? This device node is created by the kernel, and you can see if I do an rm mod, so I remove the kernel module, which in my case is called KVM info, this is the specific one, and I remove this, and then I look at DevKVM, then you see it will be gone, so the kernel will have removed this device node. And if I do a mod probe KVM info, so I insert this device, this module, which drives the KVM driver, and then do DevKVM, then you see the device is back online. So the kernel creates and removes this device node. Right. So the user space part of device management is done by the UDEV daemon. And there are a couple of implementations out there, and I think I linked to most of them, or all of them that are relevant in my description of the talk. So the big implementations are systemd UDEVD, eUDEVD, which is a fork of systemd UDEVD, to make it possible to use UDEV in OpenRC and other ended systems that are not systemd based. And UEventD, and UEventD is the Android implementation of UDEV. UDEVD used to be a standalone project that was made in the kernel, in the git.kernel repos, and the old versions are still on there. Then Leonard and Kai started systemd, and then they merged it into the main systemd tree. So UDEVD is now maintained as a part of systemd. An interesting thing to note, UDFD currently is basically unmaintained. So Leonard and so on are happy to merge patches, but they don't actually have a maintainer for it anymore because Kai Sievers is not touching UDEV anymore. So if you're up for doing UDEV, writing some C code, feel free to step up. They're always happy to take patches. Another important thing to know about UDEV is that it doesn't create device nodes by itself. This is usually a misconception that comes from earlier UDEV versions. So at least for systemd UDEV and eUDEV, I don't know of any easy way to actually have them create device nodes. Maybe I'm just not knowledgeable enough, but as far as I know, they don't. This is in contrast to Android's UEventD. So Android's UEventD will actually create device nodes for you. You can send, well, with my patch set, you can send messages to it and then get it to create device nodes for you. Instead, what UDFD is doing is that it's managing permissions and symlinks and persistent device name. So what I mean by this, for example, the idea behind this is you have a set of rules that you can write. We're going to take a look at this in a second. And then, for example, say, tell UDEV, if a specific device shows up, place me a symlink in this directory, change its permissions, and so on. And if I'm not mistaken, if you have UDEV change the permissions of a specific character or block device, the kernel will not remove it, because the kernel will think, okay, you've touched it, you know what you're doing, so I'm not going to remove this device node. So I think if we were to change the permissions on devkvm right now, the kernel should not remove it. But it's not that important. And persistent device namings, obviously, you all know the kernel has a job of booting up very, very fast, and the kernel will just at boot assign you're not guaranteed that your storage devices, let's say you have two storage devices, always come up with the same name during boot. Sometimes the same storage device will be called SDA, and the next boot it will be called SDB, which is obviously a problem. The same for network devices. So what UDEVD is doing, there's a bunch of rules, if you look in the configuration directory of UDEV, that guarantees that your devices always have consistent naming. That's why we now have these weird names. Instead of ETH0, we now have WLP2S0 or something. There are some systemd has some sort of weird way of generating these names. But this is done by user space, so this is not actually done by the kernel. An interesting question is how UDEV is informed about device events. So I said that, for example, you plug in a USB stick and the kernel will handle this device event. So it will load the corresponding driver or the generic USB driver, whatever. Then basically you have added a new device. But obviously user space doesn't know anything about this yet. So in order for UDEV to do its job, it somehow needs to be informed about when devices actually get added to the systems. There are obvious solutions, but there are a couple of solutions one can think of. And I'm just mentioning it because I had to write this code once. You could maintain a cache of dev with the iNotify API, so you could recursively watch /dev. And then every time a file shows up, you could check what kind of device file it is, and so on. And then based on this, trigger some actions. But it's, first of all, it's very sparse information you get. You just get an event you just get the name of the device, then you have to set it, get the device major number and minor number. There is obviously the problem that somebody could have the idea of writing a kernel driver that doesn't create a device node in /dev, but in /temp, for whatever reason. I don't know why somebody would do this, but it's technically possible. And also, the iNotify API is really shit. Really annoying. So that's obviously not a good solution. No, when Kai and Greg implemented this, they came up with a nicer way. Namely, over the very simple mechanism, and this mechanism is called U-events. Has anybody ever, do you have heard of U-events? Okay, so what happens basically is that when you plug in a device into your computer, like a USB stick, the kernel will handle the event, it will create a device node for you, and once it has finished creating the device node for you, it will send a U-event message to user space. And this U-event message will contain a bunch of information about the device. So this is the file that is relevant for U-events, kobject U-event.c. And there are basically two main functions right now, kobject_uevent_env and kobject_uevent_net_broadcast. The first one is actually creating the message that gets sent to user space, and the second one is sending out those uevents to user space. These functions won't be present from 4.18 onwards because of patch sets I have sent, but that's what is happening right now. And what are uevents? Well, basically just key value based messages and separated by 0 bytes. And they always use the following schematic. So this is called the header. You have an action that is performed that can be something like add, remove, or change. You have the path of the device. This is usually a sysfs path, not a def path like you would think. Here the action is repeated. The def path is repeated as an environment variable, the subsystem it belongs to, and then you have a bunch of optional optional information you can append, like driver specific. So if you implement a kernel module or a kernel driver for a specific device, you, for example, want to send out some further specific information about this device, like, I don't know, vendor number, vendor ID, whatever it is. And then at the end, you have a sequence number. And the sequence number is just a monotonically increasing number. I think it's a U64, so if you can have your computer running for a long time and plug in a long devices before you actually wrap around. And the sequence number was, and sometimes still is, used by UDEV to detect device dependencies. So UDEV will check, is the sequence number higher than the one before? Then we'll look at the device path and figure out if there is a parent device and a child device and so on. So this is the mechanism that actually is used. And I mean, I should probably just illustrate this. So yes, it's not what we want though. Okay, so I have a little function. That's not it. You want to write uevent listener. Let's split this. So if you remember the mod probe thing I did before, rm mod kvm intel, for example, and you see these are the uevent messages that get generated. This one is from me. I'm going to see this in a bit. So this part I added. Received kernel uevent from UID 0 and GID 0. But this is what the uevent actually looks like. So here you see that the kernel module, module KVM intel, got removed. The action is a remove. The dev path is module KVM intel. The subsystem is modules, and the sequence number is high. And the first message actually was the interesting message, namely that the dev KVM device that we saw before got removed. And this device is virtual MISC KVM. This is a sysfs path because devices are usually are actually handled in sysfs. So if I do a mod probe again, you see that I get the reverse order, meaning first of all the module is loaded by the kernel, add module KVM intel. Then there's slap, doesn't matter. This basically just events about memory allocator and the kernel. It's sent it out as well, but it's not relevant for us. And then the last one is actually adding the device node itself, def KVM. We've seen this before. Okay, so the one question we haven't answered so far is how actually these uevent messages can be received from user space. And the answer is very simple. It's a netlink. I'm covering a lot of stuff, I know. Feel free to ask any questions. So netlink is a, if you don't know it already, netlink is a socket-based protocol. Like Unix domain sockets, TCP sockets, UDP sockets. It is basically used to exchange information between kernel space and user space. Sargon, it's a kernel developer as well. He's doing eBPF stuff. He said a nice thing about it recently. It's a duct tape of kernel space and user space, and to some extent it's right. You can request a lot of information, but you also can operate on a lot of different devices. Like for example, network devices are queried and interacted with through netlink. So all of the IP tools suite that you have, IP route, IP address, IP add, and so on, it's all netlink behind the scenes. The problem is that Netlink's API is it's abysmal. It's really horrible. It's a really, really horrible API. And it's really shitty documented. So you can do a lot of cool stuff if you know about it, but yeah. Let's look at, for example, those JLC browsers, and then Juventus NetLC. So yes, doesn't matter. If you look at this, this is the function that we use just to listen to the U event message, to receive U event messages. Ignore all of that stuff. That's basically just read and write methods that handle being interrupted. Generic wait function, but here it's where it gets interesting. So in order to receive these messages, what we need to do is we need a bunch of variables. Most of all, we need a socket address. We need a control. We need a control. Message that holds the credentials of the U events, like the UID and GID and the PID that is sent out, an IO vector, which is where we pass in the buffer and the size of the buffer where the U event that the kernel sends out is going to be placed. We need a message header. That message header has all kinds of crap, name length, the IO vector needs to be passed in, the control stuff needs to be passed in, and the message flag needs to be set. Then we need to actually create, tell the kernel to create a netlink socket for us. So this is, okay, I want a netlink socket, socket type. Then I set options, sock raw, which is not stream-based, it's a raw protocol, and sock low exec in this case, which means if we should exec, the file descriptor of the socket gets closed so we don't leak it into another process or in the child. And this is the type of the netlink socket that we want. There are a bunch of different types. The one that is interesting to us is netlink k object u event. So we open this socket, we set some options, in this case how big the receiving buffer is going to be, then we tell it the family, and then we tell it that we want to listen to all U event messages, then we bind the socket, and then we get the socket name, we verify that the socket name is actually valid so that the sizes don't differ, and then you have a endless loop basically that always receives U events. We ignore messages that are sent from user space, or basically that are generated by the UDFD daemon. Then we look at the credentials. Usually UDEF will ignore any messages that are not sent by UID 0. So if you have a non-zero UID and GID here, then UDEF will just discard the messages. And then we dump the message to disk. But this is just to listen to messages. If you actually want to do anything interesting with a netlink, it's getting more horrible, unfortunately. But this is the way these messages can be received in user space and actually processed by the UDFD daemons. Exactly. So what I wanted to talk about first, before we go into this namespacing stuff, is basically motivate why I wanted to do this. So right now, in the age of containers, and I'm not going to tell you what containers actually are, because there's just not sufficient time. But you can watch me explain it at another conference. Well, maybe. Do you have a basic concept of what a container is right now? Oh, very nice. So the only thing we should probably be talking about is how containers and devices interact, and the problems with devices in general. So containers are obviously, that's the main argument that's always made, is they're very performant in comparison to virtual machines and so on, and that is true for the most part. It's at least very easy to get high performance out of containers in comparison to virtual machines if they can't be brought to be performing on a par is kind of a question. One of the nice things is definitely that containers do allow you to, for example, go into idle mode and not process any interrupts, so the kernel can schedule them very nicely. Virtual machines will always have some sort of overhead due to received interrupts and so on. Another thing is that containers do actually allow for easy device pass-through. So who is familiar with how device pass-through works on virtual machines, just a little bit conceptually? Yeah, so what happens is essentially you have a device and you need to do PCI pass through, which means what actually happens is that if you have a GPU, for example, in your computer, and you pass it into a virtual machine, it will vanish from the host completely. This, you can have the same concept for containers as well, but this is like in kernel side, PCI pass through is something that is really difficult to do, and it's usually works not so nicely for most cases. But for containers, what you can actually do is you can just create a device node for the device you wanted to have access to, and then it can access that device, glossing over details. Now, the reason is that obviously virtual machines and containers, the virtual machines and don't share the kernel with the host. They usually run a separate kernel. And containers do share the kernel, so they have access to the same sort of the same modules essentially. There is a caveat, obviously, which is if you run a separate user space in a container, which you usually do, and in your container, name, let's say he's the container is privileged, you load a module, you will now load the container's version of the module. But for example, on the host, you might have a different driver version, so you're fucking up your system, basically. So there are some problems with this, but usually it works. For example, for the KVM device, for the container, you have access to the dev KVM device. You just create the device node and the container can access it. But there are a couple of problems with this, which I'm going to talk about in a bit. Why this is relevant for containers in this specific case is that a lot of workloads right now, especially HPC workloads, run on containers. So for example, for us, I've recently been working with NVIDIA and NVIDIA has been working with Apple. They're using, for example, Lexi and Lexi containers to run GPU workloads. And what they want to do usually is they want to take a GPU device and hand it to the container and have the container run some, for example, machine learning stuff, whatever they are doing right now. You can get auth instances and say, I want 4 GPUs in my container. The problem with this right now is that DevTempFest is not namespaced. So, which means if you mount DevTempFest, the thing I talked about before for the people who came later, DevTempFest is a file system that the kernel maintains device nodes, character devices and block devices, and it's mounted at /dev. But if you mount it again, for example, in a container, or if you mount it again on the host, it will be the exact same file system, which basically means you're just duplicating what's under /dev. The problem with this, obviously, is that you want some sort of isolation mechanism. If you have a container that is privileged, so that runs as root, and you have it mount dev /dev, it can fuck up your whole system because it has access to every device on your system. There is a security mechanism in place for unprivileged containers, so for containers using user namespaces, meaning UID 0 in the container is not identical to UID outside of the container. There is a mapping to an unprivileged UID going on. It's not mountable in non-initial user namespaces. So if you create a new user namespace for an unprivileged container, then and you call mount t devtempfs devtempfs /dev, then the kernel will say eperm. Permission denied. Another problem is even for privileged containers where you could say I can just create device nodes inside of the container because I'm privileged, meaning UID 0 on the host is identical to UID 0 on the container. They usually drop a capability, which is cap make not, and that controls whether you can make not, so create device nodes or not. So if you're running a privileged container, dropping this capability, you won't be able to call make not from inside of the container, mean you cannot access these devices. There are other control mechanisms in place, like the devices cgroup and so on, that also regulate which devices you can access. And then the next thing is user namespaces, so containers, so unprivileged containers that have UID 0 be different from UID 0 on the host, they won't be able to create any devices at all because the make not syscall is not considered to be safe for unprivileged containers. And the reason is rather trivial, is if you're able to make not any device that you want inside of the container, you can get yourself access to any device on the container on the host. And if you have the right permissions, you can shut down the host, you can move around devices and so on. So it's not actually safe. What we ideally would want is a way to dedicate devices to containers. And especially, I mentioned SRIOV right here. Right now we have something that is called single root input output virtualization. So you, for example, can have a network card, an InfiniBand card, or a GPU that does hardware-based virtualization, essentially. So you have a physical function, which is the actual hardware device, and then it's split into, let's say, for example, for an AMD GPU, I've recently seen, it's into 16 virtual functions. The virtual functions are presented from the kernel's perspective as actually PCI devices. And this type of virtualization was actually thought for virtual machines and now also for containers, so that you can hand off these devices into containers, into virtual machines, and so on. So the hardware side has actually caught up, but the kernel side itself has not so far. So what we want is to dedicate specific devices to specific containers or virtual machines. The virtual machines part is solved, the container side is not really solved. There are obviously two solutions. The first solution is your namespacing DevTempFS and K-objects. K-objects is nothing to be afraid of. It's basically just a kernel mechanism for implementing devices, and reference counting and so on is happening in K-objects. So you could namespace DevTempFS, meaning what you would do is you make it a separate file system. So if you mount a new DevTempFS, it's not the same instance. Every time you mount DevTempFS somewhere else with a new option, for example, a new instance or something, then it's a new DevTempFS and it's dedicated to that container. And then when you plug in a device, there will be an API, let's say through Netlink, to which you tell the kernel, please move this device, I'm root on the host, please move this device into this container's DevTempFS. And then the kernel will just make the device node show up. This is the in-kernel solution. And there is also a user space solution, which is namely namespace these U events, or what we call U event injection. And we will be looking at this in a second. Oh yeah, we're good on time. And we went for the second option. And the reason for this is a while back, I wasn't even thinking about doing kernel development back at the time. I think I didn't even know how to write C code at the time, probably. Was that people tried to get an in-kernel solution, which is namespace DevTempFS and K-objects. So pretty smart people, they presented the solution at Linux Plumbers and the Kernel Summit. So they made this suggestion, and containers weren't really a thing back at the time, so the people came up with containers in the kernel and said we should do something like the Solaris zones or FreeBSD jails, and Linus and Greg were really opposed to this at the beginning. They were like, fuck containers, nobody needs containers, who cares about containers? And so when they suggested this, basically Greg, who is the main maintainer of the device driver stuff in the kernel, said, yeah, go fuck yourself, this is not happening, this is a bad idea, I'm never going to maintain this. And this stance has been the position for a long, long time now. Then there was once a user-based solution implemented by, was tried to implement by Michael J. Cross from Bell Labs, I think. He must still be there. He tried to namespace U events and make them namespace aware as well, and it was shut down as well for the same reasons, like devices belong to the host, they shouldn't go anywhere else. We won't do this. And we picked up the general idea a while back. So namespacing U events, doing U event injection. And then we started off, I think, in March or February to discuss the first sort of design. And it's I always find this type funny, these things funny, that's why I posted these here. This is just to agree on the initial design. It's like three guys, so me, Serge, and Eric. And I owe a lot to these guys, so they helped a lot with the design and the discussion of the patches and so on. And this is not like a thing you usually do on your own, so I don't want to pretend like I'm sitting at home being this brainiac that comes up with all of these solutions. Eric Biederman is working at Red Hat, he's a kernel engineer. Serge is working at Cisco right now, he used to be on my team before. So we discussed this initial design, and we opted for solution two. And to be honest, it was controversial as well, and we weren't sure if it was going to make it in the kernel. So why did we go for this option? How do these U events and namespacing U events relate to devices? So what we can already do right now is do something that we call device temp injection or dev temp fs from user space. So it is already possible to inject devices into a running container. This is something which we have implemented a while back. So you can fake the job of dev temp fs. Inside of a container, you will not have mounted dev temp fs for the reason I've given before. Usually slash dev will be a simple temp fs. But you can make it so that devices appear inside of the container, and I can demonstrate this in a running container. I hope I can demonstrate it. It's small again, isn't it? Can you see it? No.
I don't see it.
Okay. And fuck that. Yeah, we can do this here as well. One second.
Oops. Interesting.
Sorry, guys. Notice for now. Forest, go, bin, Lexi. This is just a container you're starting. So we have a container called C1 in this case. This is the one we care about. This is an unprivileged container, so we can exec into it C1 bash, and then we're in a different system, basically. Okay, I haven't moved the device. So what we can do, for example, sorry, that is so slow. Yeah, so here I have the U-event listener that you saw before, right? And let me split this. So what we can do right now, what I'm going to do here, is I'm going to add a new network device into the container. Which is, it's just a regular device from the kernel's perspective, but it's easy to demonstrate. So on my host, I have a device called ENO1, and this basically instructs going through our API. It's basically saying, I have a container, this is the name of the device in the configuration of the container. It's a NIC device, the NIC type is physical, so I'm going to do a physical pass-through of my actual device into the container, and parent basically specifies what device I'm going to use. Now, look at this window right here. This is where the U-event listener is happening, and this is with my patch set basically already. So, you add the device, and then you see received kernel U-event message from UAD0, GID0, and then you see, here the device showed up inside of the container, ENO1, device path for the container, the subsystem is network, interface, the if index of the device, and the sequence number. So if I do IP address now, you can see that there is a new device called ETH1 that showed up right now. And I can remove that device to prove that I'm not config device remove C1 my ETO. So then you see you get a remove event. So if I do IP address now again, ETH1 was the name of the device before, you see that this device is gone. So we can actually already inject new events from user space. So the dev temp fs job is taken care of to some extent. It's still nasty because it's basically sysfs would need to be virtualized as well. This is would be another part of the job, because like these devices are identified by sys path, so if you add a device, the kernel will generate them. So actually the dev temp fs kernel solution would be the nicer one. But the problem with device management before in Linux was that U-events were basically, so what you want, you add a device into the container, you want to receive a U-event, right? But if you create a container, you don't want to have access to, like you don't want it to gain information about what devices get added and get unplugged and removed and so on. But you could do this for a long time, because basically U-event handling was fucked. So there was missing isolation, which meant U-events were broadcast into all network namespaces. Brief excursion in namespaces. Namespaces are an isolation mechanism for containers. There's network namespaces that isolate network information, basically, so you get separate IP tables, you get separate network devices and so on per container. And another, there's a bunch of other namespaces, but one of the most important namespaces I mentioned before is this user namespace that isolates privileges for the container. And what you need to know, or something you should take home, is that all other namespaces are always pinned against the user namespace, meaning the network namespace has an owning user namespace. And if the kernel checks the permission, then it will look, what is the owning user namespace of this network namespace, and do you have that privilege within that user namespace? And if you don't, the kernel will say you're not allowed. If you have, then you are allowed to. So UEvent sockets, and in fact all sockets that you use on Linux, have a network namespace or are tied to a network namespace. So TCP sockets belong to a network namespace, user namespace doesn't matter that much. Unix domain sockets have a network namespace and a user namespace, meaning you can only interact with them properly if you're in the same network and user namespace, and if you have the permissions in this user namespace. This is actually pretty important. And the second problem is that these messages that were sent into all network namespaces, so into all containers, if you open the socket in a network namespace, in a privileged, unprivileged container, whatever, it doesn't matter, you could listen to these U events and you would be informed about every device event that was happening on your system, basically. The good thing is that UDEF will ignore any message that doesn't come from UID 0 and GID 0, because there was a CVE a while, long while back, that basically you could trick, when UDEFD was still creating actual devices, you could trick UDEFD into creating devices by sending fake messages or triggering fake messages that came with the wrong UID and GID, and now suddenly you had UDEFD creating devices for unprivileged users. It was a great bug. So what UDFD is doing all over the place right now is checking, is this message really coming from UID0 and GID0? And the good thing is, if you created a new user namespace, the kernel would need to fix up the credentials that are sent out with the UEvent message, so that user space actually receives these messages from UID0 and GID0. But the kernel didn't do this, which meant they were sent out with invalid UID, invalid KUID, and invalid GID. And invalid UID and invalid GID is usually 65536, so completely unprivileged user. 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks. So this was ignored by UDEF. So these messages were unfortunately ignored by UDEF. So what you would want to work device management correctly is two things. At least for complete system containers. You want to inject the device like I did right now, for example, for a network device, and then you want to be able to receive a UEvent with the correct permissions inside of the container, such that UDEF triggers, and for example, if you have a UDEF rule that states, if this specific network device gets added, please assign it an IP address, for example, or if this USB device gets added to the container, please place a symlink somewhere. And this was the one missing piece to do a user space side of device namespacing, so that you can tie devices to a specific container. So the new status, this is the patch that I wrote and discussed with Upstream, is basically, first of all, isolation. So what is happening right now, that we are filtering UEvent messages based by the owning user namespace of the network namespace a UEvent socket resides in. So if you open if you create a new container that has a new user namespace and a new network namespace, and you open a socket to listen to UEvents, you won't be able to receive any UEvents from the host, because they belong to a different network namespace. And it has a different owning user namespace. That's basically the idea. Or if that's too complicated because you're not that familiar with namespaces, just think, if you have an unprivileged container, then you won't be able to receive any device events unless you specifically tell the container that you wanted to have a device event. So there's complete isolation now, or at least starting with kernel 4.18, probably 4.17 maybe already. No, 4.18. The second thing is we're fixing up the credentials. So when UEvents are generated, this is what you saw in the demo before, The U event will be received with the correct credentials for UDEV, which means UDEV now is able to trigger on device events that are dedicated to the container. And the last thing is you need to be able to send U events from user space, and this is what we call U event injection. So right now, what you would need to do is you hand off a device to the container, and then as a privileged process on the host who is managing this container, you can open a U-event socket attached to the network namespace and user namespace of the container, and then send a U-event to that container so that the container gets correctly informed, oh, I have a device right now, I can trigger all relevant actions. So this is the complete user space solution for this stuff we've done. There's been a lot of interest around this, so that's pretty cool. But there is work to be done. And the thing is, this is something I'm going to work on just because it's going to be fun, although I'm sure it's not going to be merged, is namespacing DevTempFS and KObjects itself. It's going to be a pretty interesting task, and as I said, it has been tried before, so there should be some patches to look at and get inspired by. Because this would get rid of all of this user space handling of injecting devices and so on. The kernel would do it, it would do it properly, U events would be generated properly and so on. That would be the nice solution, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to get yelled at a lot. Second thing is a friend of mine has written a patch set which we discussed a while, 2016 I think, at Linux Plumbers, which is called Seccom from User Space, that's what I call it. It's basically, right now, you have no way, if you're a process running inside of a container, and for example, you want to create a device node inside of the container, I said you're not able to in most cases, especially for unprivileged containers or if you don't have the right permissions, essentially. So if any process inside of the container makes a make not call, for example, if you run dbootstrap and it will create a bunch of device nodes in order to bootstrap a root of S, it will just fail with etherm. There is no way to tell basically the process inside of the container it's okay what you're doing. This Seccom from user space patch set is mighty, mighty powerful. It's pretty cool because what it allows you to do, it allows you to intercept syscalls done inside of the container. So you register a Seccom filter. The container does a syscall called makenot, and the listener, basically there is a process on the host that listens to the container syscalls that it makes via NFD, and then it gets a message what syscall is being made, because Seccom knows all of this stuff. The memory of the syscall is copied to the process, and it can inspect the arguments and, for example, figure out, okay, it's going to be dev console, which is totally trivial, it's nothing bad happening. Then it will rewrite the argument of the syscall to say it succeeded, even though from the kernel's perspective it failed, and then inject the device into the container and report back to the process inside of the container, hey, the syscall succeeded. To be fair, you can do the same thing right now with ptrace, but ptrace you cannot register just interesting syscalls, you have to listen to all syscalls, and then you can rewrite the memory as well. But it's a horrible hack. And Google has actually implemented something similar, which is called gvisor, which is exactly doing that. It's listening to all syscalls that you're making, so you're seeing a performance impact. This is crazy, but okay. And there are some smaller patches to be done. There is the fact that right now we need to remove global locking. We have basically right now, we have a U-event socket list that records all U-event sockets that are owned by the initial user namespace. So if you have 1,000 processes that open U-event sockets in the initial user namespace, you have a list of all of these network namespaces. They all have a separate U-event socket. And then there is a list of all listeners on these U-event sockets. You have a list of lists, so you're in O-N squared. And you're holding a lock, because you need to guarantee that the ordering is right. So what it's doing, you're taking the lock, you're walking the list, then you're walking for each of those list members another list that can be long, send all of these U-events, and then release the lock. It's horrible performance. Like if you test it right now, performance testing, it's if you have high container workloads and they use U-events, it's abysmal. There's a global lock on the list that is on the list of lists that is still there. I've partially reworked the locking. I've removed all the sockets that don't belong to the initial username space from the list, but they all share the same lock. I need to finish, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've removed all of the all of them, but they all share the same log still because the U event sequence number is global, and it would need to be per namespace and so on. There is a bunch of work, so there is a bunch of work to be done. But yeah, so the gist of the message is we now have a way to properly delegate devices to containers. But that's it. If you have any questions, I don't know how many did I went go over.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. So if you have any questions, yes. Also ja.
English or?
Das ist egal. Es geht beides, habe ich gesagt.
Okay. Why don't they just use sockets to communicate to UDEV? Just file sockets. Then the namespace would be included in any container thing. Why this netlink stuff?
U event messages were always like this. Is just the way it was implemented, I think. I may not understand. I think I don't understand what you mean. Like the netlink is the way to send events from the kernel to user space. So this is the dedicated protocol for this. You mean if you change, if you would change UDEV to
hello.
If you would change UDEV to open to listen on another socket, for example, and then
yeah, like the kernel does with dev 0 or something, just creating a dev kernel message and sending all this the information there as a usual pipe or socket or something.
Oh, I think maybe this was a solution a while back, but yeah, I think that has been abandoned. Also, wouldn't there be a problem with dev tempf? So. Wouldn't there be a problem? You would each container would have to create that same device, and you'd still need to do namespacing, right? In the sense that you still would need to do in kernel filtering, so that you only send device events to this device for the host, and then isolate the container. So it's sort of a similar problem, right?